Welcome to Body Matters Podcast, where we bring to you raw and inspiring content on all things to do with body positivity and eating disorder recovery.
But before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as traditional people and traditional owners of this country. We acknowledge with gratitude First Nations communities for their continuing care and connection to the lands or waters with which they have protected for thousands of years. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize that First Nations sovereignty was never ceded. On this week's episode, I am super excited to be introducing you to our next special guest, dietitian Taylor Clegg. Taylor lives on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland and grew up in the world of athletics. This is where she personally went through her own lived experience with disordered eating. Having personally experienced the difficulties with disordered eating, Taylor then became motivated to be able to support other individuals within this space. Being able to support not only athletes, but anyone looking to free themselves from eating disorders. So on that note, please welcome Taylor. Well, thank you so much, Taylor, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on this podcast and, yeah, talk about something that I'm super passionate about as well too.
Yes. Would you be able to provide a little background information about yourself and maybe speak about some things that you like to do to stay well?
Yeah, definitely. So I come from the beautiful Sunshine Coast in Queensland, and I'm a recent new grad dietitian. And it was through my own lived experience with an eating disorder that sort of unveiled my desire to become a dietitian in the first place. And I know that there are so many dietitians out there that share that experience as well. I also found, alongside my experience of being an athlete, that further put me down that path of working with athletes, particularly in the disordered eating disorder space. And yeah, I definitely think that there's a younger version of me somewhere alongside other dietitians that want to continue making noise within this space, because going through this journey with an eating disorder can be so isolating. So really happy to be within this space. And in order to stay well, there's a few things, but I think one of the most simple things, particularly being on the Sunshine Coast, is just going for walks along the beach, being outside in the sunshine. There's definitely something that's super healing and really grounding that is about being outside and just being able to enjoy that space as well.
Yes. And congratulations on becoming a dietitian and coming into the space.
Yeah, super exciting. And an ever-changing space too. So it's really awesome to, be within this space, I think, in these times.
Yes, definitely. So each week on the podcast, we do like to ask our guests about a recent challenge that they've experienced and how they have managed to overcome it. Do you have one?
I thought about this one quite hard, actually. So I feel like a challenge that I have experienced and I feel continuing to work towards as well would be boundaries. And I know it probably sounds a bit cliche, but I feel like as humans, we're constantly wired to be busy, and particularly having just sort of starting work as a dietitian, I feel like that need to be busy kind of multiplies, and it sort of exists that we always have to be busy, always have to be doing something. So I feel like that, I always have to be saying yes to things. So having that boundary in place to say no and to be able to spend time on my towards myself and with myself has been a big challenge, I think, that I'm still working towards, but managing to overcome. And a little step that I've taken towards that is kind of having my well-being as more of a priority. And I feel like it's not until we get to that point of burnout or that point where we know we're doing too much that we kind of, that's kind of our lesson to really take a step back, put those boundaries in place and slow down.
Yes, and self-care in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. And I guess you talked a little bit about your experiences before.
But I guess, would you be able to talk about your childhood and what that was like growing up?
I feel like I had a really fantastic childhood. I feel so lucky to have been supported in so many ways, and I had so many wonderful people in my corner and in my life, helping me through that, through just, I guess, the growing up stage itself. And I was, brought up in the Sunshine Coast, surrounded by a lot of supportive friends and family, and I loved school and I loved activities outside of that as well, and I did make good friends. So looking back, there were so many positive experiences on that light. But then also I did start being like on my athletics journey at about the age of 9. So looking back, that was a really big part of my life. I did love it though. I did little athletics. I made some really good friends through that as well. I did cross country and track competitions. And my family were really supportive in this space, and didn't invest a lot of time and money into my athletics journey as well, which was really good. And whilst, they were only wanting me to do my best and that's what they asked for, I did place a lot of pressure on myself to perform well. So I feel like a lot of the experiences I had, particularly within the sport of athletics, also created in hand in hand a lot of anxiety as well and a lot of pressure. And really looking back, that was my main and only hobby that I ever really had. And it certainly, I guess, makes sense as to the way things planned out from there, just based on starting athletics from such a young age and then having that as the only thing that I really focused on. So, but otherwise, a really fabulous upbringing.
Yes. And I guess what was your relationship with food and body?
I honestly never thought I would be someone that would ever experience an eating disorder or have any concerns with my body, and I think that that was my mindset probably up until 16. And I feel like anyone with an eating disorder who's been through that experience would probably say the same thing. You never think you're going to be in that situation. So before the age of 16, I would be eating regular meals, snacks, desserts, social eating, like everything just came quite naturally and quite easily to me. I had a really supportive food environment growing up, which was really great. People would comment on my body as an athlete, though, and I did notice that, particularly in family gatherings, when they'd really make specific comments on the foods I would eat, or they would make comments on my body and how lean I might be looking. And I don't think I really noticed that until I got closer to my teenage years. And even within the sport, when people were making comments about my body and athletes in the squad would make comments on my body, it never fazed me until it did. And that would probably be about when I was 16. I very specifically remember a moment, when food and my body became an issue and more people began to talk about it and began to affect me so much more than it originally did. And I feel that just becomes with the pressure of the sport, the constant desire to be better. So that I feel was a huge contributor to the way that my relationship with food and my body changed. But before then it was so amazing, but it really goes to show that those small comments and that comments about anyone's body and food can certainly have an impact as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess when did things start to move more towards disordered eating?
I actually remember this time very well. I specifically remember sitting in the stands at an athletics meet. And my mum was showing me a photo of me. I was about to start a race, and it was a really, like, my mum was made no comments about the way that it looked. She just was like, "This is a really nice photo." But what stood out to me at that point is I looked at the photo and all I could see was what my legs looked like. All I could see was, oh, like they don't look as good as everyone else's. Like I was then scanning everyone else, seeing about how their legs looked compared to mine. And I will never forget that moment in time when I just was constantly looking back at that photo, and it wasn't about, oh, like I look really fit and I look really fast, and like it was more about how I looked compared to everyone else. And it was then that my mindset was not like, how can I, give myself the energy to perform? It was more about how can I get that performance edge? How can I look better? How can I eat better? And that's when it sort of stemmed my eating towards cutting out the bad, the unhealthy food, and foods were labeled as good and bad. It became really innocent. No one really noticed it at the start. It was more about being cautious about what I was eating out with other people, and people just thought I was on that typical sort of trajectory of an athlete and looking after my body. But then it became a bit more obsessive, and I started cutting out more and more food groups over time. And that is, I guess, when people became more aware of it around me. And I was so lucky that my coaches and parents as well were aware of what was going on and could see the eating disorders and disordered eating sort of unfolding. But I just remember the thought in my head thinking, they've got no idea what I'm doing. Like, I know what's best. Like, they've got no idea that this is actually going to make me better. Yeah, but that, looking back, is absolutely the eating disorder voice.
Yeah, and it's good that your coaches actually had that awareness, because how did you maybe the disordered eating actually was impacting you when they were seeing that?
Yeah, I feel so lucky that I had coaches in my corner and that were able to pick up on what was going on. So I think the main things they noticed was, well, firstly, like my performance was like nowhere near as anywhere where it was. And it was a really sudden drop in performance as well. And just the ways that I was showing up to training, like I was really distant and really isolating myself. And I wasn't, yeah, I guess they just noticed a real change in my behavior and the way that I was showing up, both sort of like physically, like performance wise, but also like my mood and my mindset as well.
Yeah, because how did you find that that impacted you then in your mood, as we're talking about lowering in the performance, and you would have had the physical symptoms of being tired and things like that?
Yeah, definitely. No, it completely flipped the way that I thought about anything. I wasn't able to process anything in the same way that I usually would. And I just found that my mind was totally fixated on food and everything around food. And my training was no longer training to see how good I can get in the race, but it was more training that was focused on burning energy. And that was a complete flip from what I'd ever experienced before. And my mood was, yeah, because I was always thinking about food and feeling like I was never good enough for making the choices that I was choosing. Yeah, my mood was at an all-time low. Like it was definitely nothing I'd ever experienced before.
And I guess then, what was the point for you that you then moved towards wanting to recover and seeing that it was becoming too much?
Yeah, I think it was more so when a lot of people around me became concerned. So actually in a school, and like 'cause when I was at school, none of my friends really made comments or anything, but there was certainly a point where some of my friends actually approached teachers, which I didn't actually know about until afterwards, but they were sort of raising the concerns about it. And it was more than when there was a lot of voices around me that were there and supporting me in actually, we are worried about you and we feel like something might be wrong. And I think because I'd been sort of struggling with it for quite a few months in quite a period of time, it became that point where I'm like, I feel like there needs to be more than this. Like I can't continue fighting this. And I feel like you get so exhausted and so tired of following the same routines and the same patterns, and it just comes a point where you can't listen to that voice anymore, and that can't just be the way that you're, I guess, living your life. Yeah, I think there's a point where you say like enough is enough, and I might need help. And it's the biggest and the hardest step that you'd ever take, but yeah, it's definitely comes a point where it's just too exhausting.
Yeah, and I guess what was that step for you? Did you go to someone to ask for help?
Yeah, my parents actually took me to the doctors, just because they're like, we need to see how you're going, like medically, we need to make sure everything's okay. So yeah, it was sort of Making sure that I was safe on the medical side first. But my parents were probably the main people that were there supporting me and the ones that were in my corner in that sense that really picked up on everything. And there was definitely a lot of tough love in there, which was the hardest thing for me to experience. And yeah, I, looking back, could not have done it without them. But in the time I was like, no, like I can't, I'm not doing that. Like I'll just get better. But yeah, if I hadn't have taken that step, I think in seeking that support from health professionals, it certainly would have been a slower journey.
Yes. And I guess there's a lot of other athletes that probably do experience this as well. And I guess, why do you think athletes are then more vulnerable to developing eating disorders?
I do want to firstly, I guess, highlight that I think that not all athletes are, say, vulnerable to eating disorders. But I did want to say that I guess my perspective is sort of coming from a personal experience and also from hearing other people's perspective and just knowing a bit more. But I absolutely do think that athletes are more vulnerable to disordered eating behaviors. I guess the world of sport, the comparison, the competition can sometimes be a bit of a breeding ground for disordered eating behaviors. And I know that we're taking a lot of steps forward. However, due to the comparative nature of sport and that internal motivation that a lot of athletes have in order to continuing to be better, to wanting to continue to work on themselves, I know that as an athlete, often, because you're using your body in order to perform, that if you aren't performing at your best, often that drive then turns into wanting to change your body, wanting to change the things that you're doing to find that sort of control, because there's only so many things that you are able to control in that setting. So I certainly do feel that, yeah, disordered eating can often be something that a lot of athletes just turn to in a time when, particularly if they're injured or a time when they sort of get stuck. That, yeah, it just becomes something that they're able to control. So I guess whilst being an athlete doesn't mean that you're going to develop eating disorder behaviors, they can certainly be vulnerable, based on the environment they're sort of placed in, the talk that goes on around them. Sometimes coaches as well too aren't always the most positive, I guess, voice in relation to the body and what the athlete looks like and their eating behaviors as well. So yeah, it's can be a really protective factor, but can also be a really detrimental factor to the athletes.
Yes, definitely. And a lot of athletes may have to, I guess, change their diets and things in order to perform. I guess, when do you think the signs and behaviors are present when it comes to potentially developing eating disorders?
Yeah, so I think where it becomes difficult is that a lot of, I guess, in an athletic populations, disordered eating behaviors or signs of an eating disorder, and I guess what is more normalized in athletes, can it can just be such a fine line. And in saying that as well, there are a lot of athletes out there that are healthy and performing well and doing all the right things, and some of their routines and behaviors can maybe come across as disordered but might not be. But then there's some that are also in that category of seemingly doing well, seemingly doing all the right things, but also might be in that category of disordered eating. So yeah, it's definitely important to be aware of those two categories. But there are some behaviors and signs that can occur, and certainly important for coaches, parents, teammates, and team members within the athletic world to become familiar with these. And certainly early intervention is definitely key. So some of them include rapid weight loss or really dramatic weight loss. I really want to highlight that regardless of anyone's individual body shape or size, this is certainly not always a positive thing. And it is really challenging for, say, athletes who are naturally in a larger body. And if they've dropped that weight, a lot of people often make comments saying, oh my gosh, like so amazing, you've dropped that weight, when it's a sign that they're actually in trouble. And say, if another sign is if athletes are constantly referring to themselves as overweight or fat or making comments really specific to their body. Another one can be, and this one can be really hard to pick up on, is excessive exercise, and athletes train hard. That is definitely something I'm sure many are aware of, but it's more about if these routines are becoming excessive, and over the amount of training that they've been programmed, or it's at the expense of an injury or an illness and they're training through that. And yeah, I guess that leads to the next one, which, yeah, training through injury and illness can be another sign that, the athlete is not really following practices that are suitable for their healthy self. Another one might be preoccupation with food, or sort of fear of calories or kilojoules, or constantly referring to this. That can, I guess, be noticed a lot in team environments if they're constantly talking about calories or food or what this person's consumed that day or what this person's going to have afterwards, or if they've I feel like sometimes it's a bit of a almost a flex sometimes if an athlete shows and goes, oh, like I actually haven't eaten today and I'm still here. So yeah, I guess it's being mindful of the conversations that are happening. And I guess another one is if weakness or dizziness or fainting or headaches, or if any of those kind of signs are noticed within training, or the coaches are hearing a lot about that from the athlete, definitely something to be aware of. And as well is a sudden drop in performance. And obviously, it's so important to be aware that there are so many factors which contribute to performance, but underfueling or engaging in disordered eating behaviors can certainly contribute to that as well too. So those are just a few. There are definitely many others as well too, but certainly a few to keep in mind, I guess, for those surrounding the athlete.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess what about the long-term effects for athletes if eating disorders are picked up?
Yeah, so the impact of an eating disorder can definitely be really long lasting for sure. However, I do want to sort of preface again that not all athletes who experience an eating disorder or engaged in disordered eating behaviors will necessarily experience these long-term side effects. However, it is so important to be aware of these as well. And also just because someone may not experience these signs, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't pay attention to them as well too. But some of these do include a loss of menstrual cycle or a more regular cycle for women, prolonged injury and illness, so just not being able to recover from illness, injury taking longer. This often occurs with lower bone density, lower immune function as well too, which can also increase the risk of a stress fracture. An upset gastrointestinal system or a gut noticed during training as well. An underfueled gut, unfortunately, can't function at its best as well too, and this can sometimes be a long-term effect, and effects on the athlete's growth and development as well too can be a long-term side effect of having engaged in an eating disorder or disordered eating behaviors. So overall, I guess these long-term effects can influence the athlete's training performance, depending on what their return to sport looks like as well too. And at the end of the day, we also can't forget the effects on the athlete's mental health as well too, which can come into play, especially if, say, the athletes had to take a really long time away from the sport, or they're coming back into it and their performance might not be so fantastic. It's, yeah, is definitely an ongoing process as well too, even say if the athlete is returning to the sport seemingly healthy medically, it certainly can have an impact on mental health as well.
Definitely, massively on mental health.
Yeah.
And I guess, how would you support an athlete who is maybe struggling with disordered eating then?
Yeah, this is a very individualized, stepwise approach, because no athlete is ever experiencing the same journey and how they recover from any type of disordered eating behaviors, will look incredibly different, from one another. So I definitely wanted to start with that. But I also wanted to identify that so many athletes, it's actually like experience a lot of barriers to reaching out to for support, because the shame and the stigma that's sometimes associated with disordered eating. So yeah, I guess the first thing to recognize when any athlete reaches out is just sort of identifying firstly that this is a huge step in their journey, and recognizing that it takes a lot of courage in order for them to have reached out for support. So that's definitely the first step. And before even discussing the food side of things with the athlete, I sort of like to disclose like my desire to stick by them every step of the way, no matter what this might look like. Sometimes it's I feel like it's really important to have that consistency for someone who's going through that journey, because certainly not easy. There's no timeline for any of these things of how long it should take when moving through disordered eating. And I feel like that's a really important sort of stepping stone to start with. And then I guess support moving through treatment often involves evidence-based frameworks to support the individual. However, it's important also to recognize the factors that have likely stemmed in order for this individual to have developed disordered eating behaviors, and yeah, really taking the time to work with them, even if it's through a couple of sessions, to identify why these behaviors are happening, and more about the sport that they're engaging in and their routine. So there's definitely a lot to know about the athlete before jumping into any type of strategies. But yeah, certainly a lot of it does involve moving through, I guess, the myths and what mindset they've come in with as well too. And again, that can sometimes take a whole session to just work through, say, one food rule or one type of strategy that they're able to use as well. And I've also recognize that listening to the athlete's needs is super important as well, and knowing that a lot of athletes often thrive off routines and structure as well, particularly when it comes to training and nutrition. So identifying that difference between what, say, is a food rule versus a food preference for that particular athlete within their routine is also so important as well. And I guess lastly, it's working within a team has become something that's really important as well. So knowing that the coach, which the athlete often sees as someone they look up to and a role model and someone who's really pivotal in their training, so having them on their side, which on your side, sorry, can sometimes be easier said than done, but also a really important step within the athlete. And obviously having other health professionals in that field is super important as well.
Yes, definitely. And you are right. It would be really hard for an athlete to come forward because it influences, I guess, their performance and their training. And it is such a big part of their life. And, they put so much energy into being an athlete, like you were saying, with your experiences of, that's your main hobby, that's what you love. And then to come forward and say you're struggling with something, but you have such a love for the sport can be pretty hard.
Yeah, definitely. No, and a lot of athletes, like the sport is how they see themselves. Like they often, a lot of them don't see themselves for any more than the sport, and so that's often I can see also why a lot of athletes do turn sometimes to food or changing their body for something in order to help improve their performance, because they're most athletes are willing to sort of do anything they can for performance. So it's
Yeah.
certainly easy to sort of see how that can unfold.
Yeah, and that's such a key point, like throwing, I guess, just not seeing your worth as a person and having unique, I guess, interests in other things, just focusing solely on the sport could be pretty narrow.
Yeah, yes, definitely.
Yeah. And I guess why then are athletes actually more likely to be able to recover from disordered eating once in treatment?
So the treatment through disordered eating certainly looks different for every athlete. Like I definitely highlighted that one earlier. And that, so the way that an athlete will go through treatment does sometimes involve an an absence from the sport or a drop in their training. However, certainly important to highlight that's not necessary for every single athlete, but there are definitely guidelines that health professionals follow for safe exercise at every stage, and their team is definitely there to support them through that stage. But I certainly think that having that change in amount of training is certainly a supportive mechanism for the athlete to recover from disordered eating, because if they're, say, still training at those really high volumes and still putting out a lot of energy and still using exercise, maybe in not the most supportive way, it's harder to move past and move through those types of food rules. Definitely still important to recognize it's not the only way that athletes can recover from disordered eating, but definitely something important to keep in mind. The most important thing for athletes to keep in mind, though, with treatment is it does take a lot of time and commitment. And that is why a lot of athletes, it is certainly important to spend that time on treatment and sometimes doing the sport and putting their full energy and commitment to that. And also focusing on treatment is not always possible. And also within the treatment stages, there's usually a multidisciplinary team or more than one individual involved. So it certainly highlights why it's a more successful approach when there's not just, I guess, the nutrition aspect involved in it, but there's the coaches, there's the loved ones or the family involved, there's the medical side of it as well. So and obviously like the psychological if that's deemed necessary. So all of those components together certainly provide the most beneficial way for an athlete to move through, is it's not just considerate of the one aspect, but more the multiple aspects that are usually involved in the development of disordered eating as well. But I also wanted to sort of say that the good news is that many of the characteristics and the values that athletes hold is so unique, and often makes for a really successful recovery from disordered eating behaviors. In fact, I've definitely seen in many places that a lot of athletes do have better treatment outcomes as they're so wired and used to taking directions and following the process as an athlete. So that then converts to a really successful tool that they're able to use when working through recovery. So, yeah, definitely something I wanted to highlight is that, yeah, obviously the athlete has that mindset of, determination and commitment to the sport, which can make them at a greater risk of experiencing disordered eating. But at the same time, it's really cool to think that athletes are also, they have those mechanisms that they're able to use in other ways. So they're able to then start focusing on how am I able to support my body in the best way right now.
Yes, definitely. Athletes have such a unique sheer drive and motivation, as well as like a love for the sport. So yeah, to know they're working towards something that they are passionate about and they do love.
Yeah, absolutely. More for the longer lasting recovery as well too. So I think if athletes are sort of in that mindset of this is for the longer lasting, healthier version of myself, as opposed to a quick fix or or something that might not be as longer lasting.
Yes, definitely. And I guess, do you have any tips to help athletes maybe protect themselves from eating disorder behaviors while training?
Yeah, so the environment that a lot of athletes are in can definitely, and as we've sort of highlighted earlier, make them a bit more susceptible to developing disordered eating behaviors or an eating disorder. And the training culture and environment, the diet culture present within conversations, the comparison, the comments, even if they're little subtle comments on people's bodies, and the pressure to look a certain way in certain sports, especially, are definitely driving factors to how these eating disordered behaviors present, especially in training environments. So with this in mind, I do have a few tips. So firstly being aware of the language that you and your teammates are using surrounding body, food, in any sort of way. So if something doesn't feel right, definitely consider how long you're spending around those people or the types of conversations that are being had. And if something doesn't feel comfortable or feel right, don't be afraid to remove yourself from that situation to protect yourself. And I guess that moves into my next one, which is understanding your own self-talk and your own internal dialogue. If this is starting to feel a little bit unsupportive of yourself, then definitely think about this as think about bringing this up with a loved one or someone around you to sort of see if they're able to support you through that. Also, recognizing unhelpful social media accounts is a big one. Even if they are the most supportive or seemingly the most positive social media account, a lot of them can also trigger comparison and a lot of unhelpful thoughts as well too. So definitely something that I talk about with a lot of people as well is just being considerate of what you're scrolling through, because it's certainly something that if we are seeing all the time can certainly then translate into our behaviors. And having a good team, I guess sometimes it's like the athlete can only do so much to protect themselves. So having the right team around you, say if that's a sports dietitian, a doctor, a physio, a psychologist, what you feel is going to help you in being able to be the best athlete that you can be, but also be the healthiest athlete you can be. And that's not just considerate of what you put into your body, but the way that you speak to yourself as well too. And also finding a good coach. Now, I know that this may not always be in the athlete's kind of frame of mind, but coaches at the end of the day are often role models for athletes. They're mentors. They're also a really good in a really good position to assist with prevention management of these types of behaviors. They might be able to identify early warning signs. They might be able to sort of navigate conversations that the athletes or their team are having around food or their body. And they can certainly be the ones that share those really positive messages to the athletes, to the parents, and those within that field as well too. So yeah, those are I guess a few things that I would certainly keep in mind as well.
Yes, definitely. And I really loved the idea of finding someone to support you. I guess if you didn't have anyone in that space, finding that person that can back you, that is part of your team that you're able to kind of go to.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that some it's firstly a huge step to take when you feel like something isn't right. Speaking up is, I think still something that's really challenging, even though a lot of us are really encouraging people to do it more nowadays. But some people worry, I guess, what other people might think of them if they speak or talk about eating disorders or disordered eating behaviors or patterns around them. And yeah, it's really hard to hear that, but knowing that there are other people out there and available to help support them is the the biggest thing.
Yes, definitely. And I guess, do you have any advice for any athletes who are currently struggling with disordered eating?
Yeah, definitely. So I know that I've shared a few things throughout this time, but if there was one thing I feel that would be really helpful to remember, it would be that the sport can always wait for you, but your health, well-being, your overall mindset as well too can't necessarily. I definitely wish this is something that someone had told me when I was an athlete and going through a lot of disordered eating behaviors and my eating disorder itself. I just remember for so long trying to fight both the eating disorder voice and also show up to training and train at my best and perform, which evidently became impossible, because the voice just got too strong. And as strong as athletes are, it's so hard to fight both. So often we may not be able to recognize that we aren't able to continue training at those higher levels, and that what we're doing to our bodies and listening to this disordered eating voice is not actually going to make us the best athlete. And it can be really hard also because physical injuries, say when someone hurts themselves at training, gets a stress fracture or something like that, when that develops, people can see that, but when there's sort of eating behaviors or disordered eating behaviors, that's not always like seen, or it's not always shown. So that can certainly act as a barrier for people to reach out. So I can definitely understand what stands in the way of that. But at the end of the day, I just want to identify that being an athlete doesn't mean living by the extremes. It doesn't mean you have to have this extreme diet. It doesn't mean you have to have the extreme or the perfect or the ideal body type or be engaging in all of these behaviors that are seemingly or apparently going to make you the best. Yeah, at the end of the day, you also don't have to be incredibly unwell in order to seek support, because early intervention is key. Getting onto these types of behaviors is certainly important in being able to move forward and continue doing the things you love as an athlete and outside of that as well too.
Yes, great advice. And I guess for anyone who would like to find more information about you, where could they find you?
So I am on Instagram. I feel like that might be the easiest platform to highlight. So my Instagram name is Fueled with Taylor, and that does have all my links to my website and everything that I've got available. So I feel like that might be the easiest platform for you to find me.
Well, I want to say thank you so much for this episode, Taylor. It has been sensational.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed talking about this too, and I feel like I could certainly talk about this for hours as well. So thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's the end of today's episode. Please subscribe, leave us a comment or a review. If you would also like to learn more about Body Matters services, you can check out our website at bodymatters.com.au. Thanks for listening.